outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bavada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, welcome back to The God Journey. I'm Wayne Jacobson, and I know I promised you this part two talk with Julie. We left at a cliffhanger last time where I had the bone to pick with her. Well, I did get to pick that bone. We spent a good time talking about it, but I've got Kyle on the line, and so instead of going that direction, we're going to hold that. You'll get it hopefully next week. Not going to make any promises, but we really wanted to talk a bit about the coronavirus situation, and we didn't want to tape something now that would play 10 days from now because that's absurd, because things will change yet again. I know when Julie and I just made some comment about toilet paper, we were kind of light about it because the culture was being light about it. And then before that podcast aired, all of a sudden sports teams are canceling their seasons and all kinds of stuff happened. So it seemed more trivial than I think we meant it to be. We risked that here. This is Tuesday and this will air on Friday. So we risked that same thing. But man, what a week the last week has done. Kyle, man, everything has changed. This is Kyle Rice from Wyoming joining me by way of FaceTime. So hopefully we'll keep a good signal. But yeah, man, everything has changed in the last week.
It has. Everything has changed in just a matter of a blink of an eye. That there was a certain trajectory that I think everybody's lives were going on, and in the drop of a hat, everything shifted. And it has been crazy.
Even the confusing message we got from the administration, which was, hey, it's just like the flu, no big deal. And in fact, I still hear that today on some of my social feeds when I'm putting something up about this. Someone say, hey, it's just like the flu. More people died from the flu last year. But this is not the flu. More people died from the flu last year because this pandemic is just getting started. If we don't make these changes, there'll be a lot more people die than that flu. And I still think there are people out there who don't get that. And probably people listening to this who are just saying, guys are making a big deal out of nothing. Believe me, they don't shut down sports seasons and all the money that goes behind that if there wasn't a major reason. This is not on a whim. This is not panic and fear. This is a very real coronavirus that we're going to have to contain by limiting our contact to other people. And that has caused there to be incredible changes.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. For me, I've been going back and forth on, is this thing actually real? Or is there something about it that they're not telling us? Because if they are willing to cancel March Madness and the NBA tournaments, then they're losing a lot of money and a major audience is being influenced by that. So that kind of a decision is obviously not a decision that's made lightly. And yet then, like you said, there's that mixed message of, well, it's just like the flu. It's just a different strain. Most of you will not even experience significant symptoms, but we're trying to get ahead of this. So what are your thoughts? Where do you think we're landing right now?
The thing that makes the most sense to me is they're just trying to blunt the curve. If 100,000 people in the U.S. are going to get this thing, or a million or whatever it is, then you don't want all that million getting it today because our hospitals cannot handle it. We don't have enough ventilators. We don't have enough of that kind of stuff. So they're just trying to dull that curve. So if 100 or 200,000 people get it, they're getting it over 3 or 4 months, not in 1 or 2 weeks. And so that's the point. Now, people your age who for this seems to be fairly mild, kids don't even seem to get it. It's more aimed at people, honestly, like me. I've never been in the at-risk group before. I feel a little strange when they're saying, if you're over 65, do not leave your house. And we're like going, really? And Sarah's, you know, over 65. She's also got some allergies and asthma. She was told this week by her doctor she's really high risk and we need to make sure we're staying away from any potential for her to get the thing. So it has really changed our lifestyle, and I think for the good. Part of me, I'll be honest, I don't know if I should even say this. I'm somewhat conflicted, you know, because I think it is a serious problem, particularly for older people or people who are infirm. It's also a big issue for health workers. You can't have all these people crashing in before health workers are ready to handle it. So I get all the concern. I think we ought to do that. On the other hand, and I think for millennials, for people your age, and they said yesterday, millennials will be the ones that'll save the country. If they limit their, I mean, they really put it on them, which is amazing because they're not even be that affected by it. But it really is to keep from culling the herd from us older folks who in times past this would have culled us from the herd, which in some ways opens up opportunity for younger people to thrive, where the baby boomers are still hanging on with their money and their medical needs and their financial stuff. And so that's where I'm a little bit conflicted. I know in times this is how humanity gets culled. It's a horrible way to say it.
Yeah.
But it's just you get top heavy in the older age brackets. And I know nobody's talking this way because you don't want to just look at people and say, you know what, we got 20 ventilators here. We got 400 of you waiting in line. So 380 of you are sorry, nothing we can do for you. You don't want to get caught in that.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I am absolutely overwhelmed by how much this culture has changed in 48 hours. That people really, I mean, some people don't get it, so there's some problems still out there. But overall, everybody is kind of hunkered down, limit, except for the, you know, panic shopping, which is, I was just at the store today because Sarah, keeping Sarah out of the store as much as possible. So I went to the store today to get some things we needed. And you look at all the stuff that's not there anymore and rows of empty shelves. And you hear the story of people got, you know, 6 years worth of toilet paper in their garage. You're going, really? What is wrong with you people? The food is still being brought to the store. Now, I realize here in California, they've really discouraged restaurant shopping, and most people mm-hmm. eat in restaurants. So I realize there are more people buying food than have normally been buying food at a grocery store. I get that. Mm-hmm. But the runs on paper goods, some of that stuff is just bizarre. And they do say, what I've read about it is they do say it gives people a sense of control. They're afraid of being out of something. They stock it in the garage. That pile of toilet paper, paper towels, whatever it is, gives them a sense of security, false though it be. It gives them a sense of control, which shows, you know, how warped our society is in terms of wanting to have this illusion of control. And that was interesting that all this cavalcaded after Julie and I did that podcast on where else do we learn to struggle? And we were talking about raising kids. But now we've got a population of people that, I mean, we've had the good life for any number of years. We've had a few economic downturns, but since World War II, mm-hmm. we've done nothing that's most, I mean, it's my whole lifetime that we've never had to mobilize, even in the Gulf Wars and the anti-terrorism thing of the early 20s. All the government asked for us, keep spending your money, keep spending money, because we don't want our economy to go bad. And so we were consumers for God and country or whatever it is. Now it's actually changing the lifestyle of people. And I honestly think this can be a good thing, not a bad thing.
Yeah, I think this is an excellent recalibration. You know, I had a couple of really rough days because I'm in an interesting situation where I am going to be job hunting as of June 1st. And so my contract is up then, and I had several possibilities that...
Your district's not going to renew it.
Correct. So the district's not going to renew my contract, and I had a couple opportunities from WNCC, had an opportunity from one of the local educational services here.
What's WNCC? You just can't throw out terms like that, Kyle. Sorry. We don't all live there. What is it?
Western Nebraska Community College.
There you
go. It's a local college that's
okay.
About 20 minutes away from us.
You live in Wyoming, but you're right on the border with Nebraska. So you kind of do a lot of fudging on that side of the border, don't you?
I live 6 miles from the Nebraska border. So we do a lot of business with Nebraska.
Okay. And so there was a job offer there, but...
Right now, with everything closing down, everything is at a standstill, and the last thing that they're thinking about is personnel changes or hiring or onboarding anybody new. Everybody is looking at their resources and just hunkering down. And so for me, it was a bit of a trying time, and I thought it was quite timely that you and I had a personal conversation just about finances and about God stepping into our lives and resourcing the dreams and passions that he has placed in our hearts and what that would look like. And you challenged me about having my identity or my grip on my career and my job and that being the place that resources me financially. And now all of a sudden I'm sitting on my couch looking at this and saying, oh, well, I didn't expect that conversation to become so real so fast, but here we go. This is going to be quite interesting.
Yeah, that happened for Sarah and I, too. We went from being gainfully employed and health insurance and all those good things to nothing within 2 or 3 days and no severance pay. So we got thrown into that same fire about 25 years ago, which is, you know, I could have gotten jobs. I had job offers to go pastor. I had all that. But I just sense God kept saying to me, I want you to do what's on your heart and I'm going to resource you. And that's a dumb thing to say to people whom God is not really saying that to. So they're going to try and live off my obedience or my freedom or whatever. And I just told people, if you want that, then you ought to be concerned. When God invited me down that road, I didn't want to go down that road. I even defied him. Just, you know, I hope you don't. Because if you don't, I'm not going to help you. I'm not going to go beg money from my friends. I'm going to do what you asked me to do. And as long as you resource me, then I'm in. And because I believe that you and I see through a glass darkly. So we can be wrong. We get impressions. Oh, God wants to take care of me. I know so many people who went bankrupt living by faith. They were just going to trust God for their income, but they really weren't trusting God for their income because they were doing what they wanted to do, hoping God would pay for it, which is different than doing what God's asked you to do and then watching how he resources that, because he may resource it through different kinds of employment or self-employed opportunities or a job. For Sarah and I, it was not always just we had money there. Some days it was, some month it was painting someone else's house. It was doing something that God gave us to do that was part of that provision. So it wasn't just, I'm going to sit on my couch and watch TV and hope the money comes rolling in, or I'm going to, you know, work on my book. And it wasn't that. It was that real dynamic, God, what are you calling us to? And every month was the test. If the money was there, we kept going. If the money wasn't there, Wayne was getting a real job. So, man, our hearts are with you in this. But if this is where God is leading you and there's some things in your heart that God's now asking you to put into the world, then it will be there.
And that's, I think, part of that recalibration process is I don't think that it's just finances. Obviously, finance is a major consideration for so many people listening to this. I talked with a good friend of mine just this morning that owns a restaurant in Montana and has been doing that for 15 years. And they put out a Facebook video of them in their kitchen walking people through a recipe. And this person has a counseling background, some psychology background. And so they were actually integrating into their baking process some self-care techniques and some counseling thoughts. And and it was really cool. And I messaged her and said, hey, just want to thank you for your video. Like, that was really encouraging to me. I loved the recipe, but it also was really cool to see how you brought a whole nother level into that. And her response was, yeah, I felt like I had to do that because she said, Kyle, I came into my restaurant and I had to lay off people that I've been working with for several years because we have to shut down our restaurant. And she's like, I'm the only one that's able to maintain the kitchen. I'm going to do some orders to go. But other than that, I don't have any income coming in. And so I couldn't afford to continue to keep them. And her response, instead of, obviously she had some not necessarily depression, but there was some anxiety and some sadness and sorrow. But her intentional choice was to move towards putting something good into the world. And I think that every single one of us is now being faced with that question. Because I think, like you said, with World War II, I think we have gone so long as a nation where there hasn't been a nationwide rallying story that's caused us all to sacrifice for something bigger than ourselves.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
For sure. No, it just hasn't been. And it'll be interesting to see if our country has the mettle to do it. Obviously, the NBA owners did, the NCAA did. I mean, these are people that are giving up millions of dollars to cancel things. Now, there's been talk of the government, you know, paying it all back. And I don't know about that. I don't know where you get hardship and then the government just gives money to everybody. I think hardship is a reset. It gives us an opportunity for something different. I don't want to see people starving in the streets, but we already have some people starving in the streets. One of the most horrible statistics I've heard from this, my daughter said, I haven't read this. I don't know where she got it, but she said she had read somewhere, there will be more bankruptcies from this coronavirus than there will be deaths. And that's a whole nother side of it. I mean, we're all geared up working against the exposure of at-risk people groups and the society as a whole. And somehow trying to do what Italy and some other country, Korea, didn't do. It got into the whole culture before they had a chance to even try and do some social distancing to get us apart from people. But to think how many people will lose their jobs and their livelihood simply because people can't go take advantage of the services. And most businesses operate on a razor thin margin. You can't go a month or two. And they're talking about August.
Yeah.
Before we may get back to some sense of normalcy. Now, I don't know what that'll mean. It's, I mean, everybody's kind of looking at models going, we'll find out what the decisions we've made now, how they're going to impact us a month from now. And there'll be other models then from that. So obviously we've made huge changes in our culture, and I would hope that would mean huge changes in the growth of that virus. But, you know, I've had to this week finally can't, I mean, I'm not sacrificing a lot. I canceled all my trips right now. I'm not going to travel till this gets sorted out. But that's, you know, that means, well, my sacrifice is being home with Sarah every day. So that doesn't seem like a huge sacrifice, and it's not to me. It isn't.
Yeah.
Other people who are really, their business is going to go under. They can't keep their restaurant open. They've closed all bars out here, and they've encouraged restaurants just to do takeout. You know, I guess stores are still doing well. Costco was hiring 100,000 people. So some of those folks that don't have jobs there, go over and get jobs there. It's a nightmare. And I vacillated between some of the religious messages I'm getting from people that I think are really empty, which is, hey, our best days are ahead of us. Don't worry. Things are great. God's in control. And I go, really? You guys who think that way are not helpful to people who are going to go through severe times. And to think that the coronavirus or its impact economically is only going to happen to non-Christians or unbelievers is just the stupidest way that religious people think that, oh, because we follow God. I had this come up in the last trip I was on where somebody was talking about the coronavirus and said to their child, don't worry, it's not going to come to us because we're under the covenant. And I just looked at her and I said, so you think the people in China or the people dying of it are not under that covenant? None of those were followers of Christ. And then she didn't even look at me. She turned to her child and she said, don't worry, honey. They just didn't know how to live in it like we do.
Oh.
And I know that gives her comfort and gives him some measure of comfort until it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole false view of it doesn't rain on the just and the unjust alike. It just rains on the bad people. It just, you know, bad stuff happens to bad people. Good stuff happens. That's fine until it doesn't work for you. Until your husband loses his job or your parents get killed by the coronavirus or whatever. That whole false thing of everything's just going to get better. Don't worry, it's a blip on the radar screen. Everything's going to be marvelous. Man, I like encouraging people. I think that for most of us, yes, at the end of the day, life will go on. Things will be fine. But in the interim, people are going to suffer and hurt. And when they're asking us, I mean, last Friday, it was be in rooms, no meetings of 250 or more.
Mm-hmm.
By Sunday afternoon, it was no meetings 50 or more. Then by Monday, it was 10 or more. And I know churches who struggled with this, who are going to, you know, as one church in L.A. said, I heard somebody the pastor works with. The pastor had said, safest place you can be is in church. We don't care what the government's saying. We're going to create a coronavirus petri dish right here in our, he didn't say it that way, of course, but that's what's going on. The idea that God would make sure no coronavirus gets passed at church because it's the safest place to be is an absurd view of God. And I know my dad's church met last Sunday, but they were under the numbers. I asked him today, I said, they're going to change that. It's down to 10 now. And he said, yeah, I don't know what everybody's trying to sort that out now. And how much are we going to follow it? And how much are we going to have this faked idea of God's going to protect us all if we're in church on Sunday morning? So we're going to keep doing it.
It'll be interesting too, to see what happens to a lot of the institutional Christian churches in this country, because if they have to stop quote unquote meeting for several weeks, if not months, what's going to happen to those institutions? Will they continue to function? Will they not continue to function? Because it's not that the Church of Christ is going to be going down in flames if a bunch of institutions go bankrupt or institutional churches close their doors. But, you know, in the midst of all of this calibration, it'll be very interesting to see what the impact is on on these financial institutions that also hold a Sunday morning gathering for church on a weekly basis.
And that's the big concern. I mean, you can give tithes and offerings, you know, through your credit card or whatever from home, but it's not to the same scale. And everybody knows that. That's why you pass an offering bag on Sunday morning, because people are being looked at by other people and they feel that. Got to put something in. They get more dollars from passing a plate than they would if they didn't pass a plate, which is why they do. They get more money when they meet. And I remember being a pastor, I mean, truth in advertising, man, when I was a pastor, one week we couldn't meet in our facility because of we were renting a facility from a school and they had something going on and we couldn't use that facility that Sunday. And so one of our elders said, why don't we just cancel it? Tell everybody, enjoy the day, enjoy your family and stuff. And my first thought was, wow, that's a quarter of our offering gone for the month.
Mm.
That was my first thought. I was not, you know, I'm going to reckon this all out and see where it just, and I know, I mean, I live in a different space now in terms of my confidence that God pays for what he does. But I think what a lot of these churches are concerned about is God may not pay for this. This may not be what he's doing. And that's a concern. It's also if people fall out of the habit of coming here every Sunday, because that's a big part of those who go, who take their identity from being there. If they fall out of that habit, will they all come back? And this is a very scary time, I think, for those institutions.
Mm-hmm.
But to keep meeting in the face of it, or like a friend of mine, he got an email for this week because he wasn't there on Sunday morning. And so he got an email. Are you giving into the fears of the world we live in? Or you don't have faith in God that you wouldn't come here and be with his people on Sunday morning? I mean, it wasn't just, you know, we're trying to meet and doing what we can here, but you're a bad person if you don't come and support us. It shows you don't have any faith when it's not the reason why he wasn't there. Man, I'm telling you, and I get the fear behind all that. And it's part of that reset. It certainly is.
So what are some other ways that you think God might be using this time to reset?
Well, you know, I never liked the term God using anything, even a pandemic.
True.
You know, I'm reading the Minor Prophets right now. Not a good time to be reading the Minor Prophets, because it's all this, you know, this is what's going to happen to you because you've ignored me, you've ignored my ways. And I do think that God's hand of judgment lies in this, which is not he caused it, right? But that our inability to be in sync with our Creator and the selfishness with which we live our lives and the indulgence in which we live our lives, that intruding into that lack of syncing up with the Creator is something diabolical now is loose in the system. And it's not God doing it or God causing it or even what God caused through it. But I think in every time of extremity is God inviting us back to real priorities. What's really important? What happens for people who are suddenly in their home for 5-6 weeks in a row, maybe 6-7, maybe 4-5 months in a row? What does that do to the relationships? What does it do when I can't fill my life with the sports things I enjoy? Because I think we do hide a lot of our emptiness in our entertainments.
Yeah.
Now people can go to Netflix, people can go to Amazon, people can find everything they can stream for a while. But can you be alone with yourself or alone with your spouse and thrive? And if not, this is a great time to learn to do that. This is a great time to not let the quiet beat you up and to realize that God's love and reality hasn't shifted. He's in my life, my heart. Maybe I've gotten distant from that because I've been preoccupied with distracting things. Now, when we draw into that space, what are we going to find? And I think that's always what calamity is meant to do, is draw us back to him. Israel always saw God as the cause. God's the one pushing the buttons of the sickness, the famine, the whatever. I tend to think the world pushes those buttons and it's humanity's out of syncness with God that creates these kinds of things. And blaming God is just, I was reading in Micah, there he says, blaming me as if I don't have enough patience, as if I don't have this, I don't have that. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's pretty dumb. But that's what humanity does. We want to blame the higher power. God's behind it all. Instead of, no, this is going to be an extreme time for all of us. Yeah. There's going to be things lost, things gained. People we love are going to die. as a society, we're trying to make sacrifices together, which could invite us beyond our polarized space. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Right now, I think everybody's using the virus to promote their own political agenda. There's been less of that in the last couple of days. So I think people are finally getting around the fact that this is a problem. This is a huge problem. And unfortunately, the administration wasn't ready for this and downplayed it when we should have been being much more and listening to the doctors and medicine people who were telling us, no, this is a big deal. We've got to change the way we live. Now we're listening. Finally, will there be impact from that? Sure, there will be. There'll be impact from the fact that we ignored this for longer than we should have. More businesses will default because of that. More the changes we make are more extreme. But if we don't make those changes now, they'll be more extreme a month from now. So good that we're doing it now. Would that it had been earlier. Would that we'd had the foresight for that. And in the midst of this, what I hope people do is say, you know what? This doesn't change who God is. This is a pretty messed up world. It always has been. So that's not changed. My illusion of my life being secure and protected and everything's fine for me, maybe that illusion is disturbed, but the reality is no different. The world's a mess. And God's love finds its way into the cracks of our own nakedness and fears and insecurities. God's love wants to access us there if we have the courage to embrace it. And not the tendency, I think, is we're going to grab for something that gives me a false security. And I want to live on that drug of false security until then something bad happens to me. And hopefully if it kills me, I still have the false security or whatever, however people reason that out. I'm a realist, man. I'm just for saying, hey, this is a big deal. Protect yourself. I don't live in the fear of it, which is why I've trusted the government to tell me the best choices I need to make. And I know it sounds weird because I'm not a government guy. I don't think government has all the answers, but I know there are medical people, CDC, there are people behind that who are saying, okay, this is prudent for the good of others. Now, I'm not in fear. If it's my time to, if Sarah and I get this thing, it's our time to go. Hallelujah, man. I'm ready to go home. I'd rather not go home suffocating to death, but you know, whatever. I'm not afraid of that impact, but I am aware that my choices impact other people. So I want to be as responsible as I can. Sarah and I, we've hunkered down. We're limiting our contact to other people, except this. I mean, FaceTime, you can call all the people you want, talk, set a small group up on your computer with Skype and talk to 5-6 people at the same time. We can still have all kinds of fellowship in a protected way where we're not fomenting the virus. So what changes are you guys making? I mean, it's Wyoming, man. There's probably not as much, obviously, human interaction in Wyoming as there is in Southern California. But what do you guys got going on? You got a young child in the world? And
we do have a young child in the world. She seems like what they're saying is she's at fairly low risk. My wife does have a compromised immune system. She does have an autoimmune disorder. And so that's something that we're taking into serious consideration and limiting where she goes. There's been very limited cases where we're at. Wyoming basically wrote the book on social distancing.
As a way of life.
As a way of life. There's only 600,000 of us in the entire state. So
that's the new tagline, I think, for visitors to Wyoming. Come where social distancing is a way of life.
And I think I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't close their borders and say, no, we want to keep our social distancing going on here.
Yeah, you invited Sarah and I up there if we needed a safe place to go. And I'm thinking, man, by the time we get there, they're going to have that border closed and people with guns sitting on the borders and don't you dare kind of come in. Exactly if you're from California. I mean, they've shut down San Francisco. You can go for a walk and that's about it. You can't leave your home for any other purpose that isn't absolutely necessary. Doctor's visit or food run or whatever. That's 7 million people in the Bay Area. Far as we know, in Ventura County, they've got 7 people, I think, who are identified with the virus. It's not huge here. Of course, they don't know because we haven't had any adequate testing. They don't know how many people actually have it, actually carry it. But hopefully in the next few days, we finally get a test out there and we can manage this disease better if we know what we're fighting. But anyway, we didn't try to make the run to Wyoming.
Well, the offer's still there.
Thank you. Are you inviting anybody else? Just Sarah and I. You want to throw that? You want to throw that pretty wide margin here?
Well, there's a limited number of space in the state, but no, it's been really interesting watching the reactions out here. We've had the toilet paper overtake has occurred out in Wyoming and Nebraska as well. You can't find a roll of toilet paper to save your life.
Isn't that the strangest thing?
It's
like the disease causes diarrhea, which it doesn't. The disease is respiratory. It's going to be like Y2K people that had so much dried food in their house after it passed that now you're having to sell your dried food or eat it, or I don't know what you can do with toilet paper, burn it in the wintertime. It's crazy.
I have no idea. My favorite, though, is that out here in Wyoming, some of the response is, well, you go ahead and stock up on toilet paper. I'm going to go and stock up on ammunition. And if I get low on toilet paper, I'm going to come and get yours. So
that's Wyoming humor, people. Yeah, I'm sure there's people in California that feel that way, too.
I don't doubt it. I have some relatives that would fall in that category that still live in California.
And now the people that have a whole garage full of toilet paper are out buying guns so they can protect their toilet paper. The other people with guns come together. It's strange that that became the comfort food.
Yeah.
I mean, why would that be? But once somebody starts it, then everybody jumps in. Just that mass hauling back from Europe, just the talk of closing the European thing. And we had some friends who were in Europe, and man, what they did, they were told to stay on a boat. They were quarantined, whatever, because they were in a high risk country. And they just, as soon as the captain left the boat, everybody ran off the boat and got on flights and got on Uber cabs and went to the airport, got on planes, flew back. And then you're coming into the country when you're packed into these rooms with thousands and thousands of people for 6, 7, 8 hours. Can't imagine how much coronavirus got passed around those environments.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
You just don't know. Yeah. And they said the testing coming in was nothing. That nobody asked them a question. Nobody took their temperature. They just right back in the U.S. because they were trying to clear the hall out.
They have actually found that Taiwan's actually been doing really well with some of the techniques that they've used, because they actually ignored some of the stuff that China and the WHO said, and they had mass temperature screeners in their actual airports. They did tests on the plane before you could even get off the plane, and they've really been able to minimize the spread and impact of the coronavirus in their area.
Well, and also it's a much smaller country, so they can do some of those things. I think
correct.
Even the whole thing with masks, they were trying to discourage people from buying masks because health workers needed them.
Yeah.
But they come out with something really stupid, like they don't protect you anyway. Well, then why do the health workers need them? Because they do protect you. So, and I wish the government could just talk to us like we're adults. I know there's a lot of people out there who just can't think rationally in a situation like this, but I would still hope the bulk of Americans could say, listen, masks are helpful. Wear them if you can. When Sarah went to her allergist the other day, he looked down and said, why aren't you wearing a mask? Mm. And Sarah goes, I didn't know. Yes, you of all people need a mask on every time you're out in public. Mm. And we're like, oh, okay, well, there's some news. But that was being so discouraged because, again, people were buying them in panic, and then people were trying to sell them at ridiculous prices. That was part of stocking up, I'm glad they got caught trying to price gouge in the middle of a crisis. I mean, it's just amazing, because I think what this is doing more than anything, it's testing our level of selfishness.
Mm.
If it's just you and my family, and I'm going to protect and hunker down, I'm going to do everything, and I'm going to grab everything I can get out of the store, and I'm not going to listen to how it is that we are generous. Don't buy more than you need. It'll be there next week. You know, calm down. We're going to test and see how much selfishness there is in our world. And that's not a great bet.
No, that's a pretty scary proposition. I think that that's going to be one of the dominating features and conversations that comes up in this, because especially as Americans, we've become so egocentric. It's all about us. It's all about our wants. It's all about our needs as an individual. It has almost nothing to do with the larger population as a whole and how it impacts it.
And we almost pride ourselves on that. We're independent. You know, the government's not going to be in our rights. And I heard some people arguing today, can the government close down your business like restaurants and bars? And going, you know what? This is not the time to fight the legality of that. There's a good reason why.
Yeah.
And to just say, well, I, you know, they can't make me, they're not going to, you know, there's no law. There are laws. There are things that governors and presidents are empowered to do in crises like this that become law.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's going to test whether or not we're community minded people. And I think for Americans, the whole self-made independence we're going to have a hard time cultivating community in our world. But fortunately, at least most people I know, even, and I don't mean just people that are on the God journey or life journey, whatever, just people in my neighborhood, most of the people, occasionally you got some wacko on the deal espousing some really nutty stuff. Like, it's just the flu. It's no big deal. Don't worry about it. Government's lying to you. But for the most part, people are going, okay, how can we help each other?
Yeah.
What do other people need? How can we be available? And I people we've met on the street walking the dogs, they did stay discreet distance. We still talk to each other. We're still friendly, even if we don't know each other. But they're being respectful and they're being kind. And, you know, I don't think this is a pandemic where we need to all be in fear because millions of people are going to die. But I do think a lot of people are going to die. Some people are going to lose businesses. And if we can navigate it without fear, and find that connection. If we have it, rest in that connection with God. If you don't have it, this is a great time to find it. You've got some extra time in your life to just sit and say, God, what am I lacking? Where do we break through? Where do I see? What am I missing about this journey? Because, man, connecting with God at a time like this and knowing that regardless of what circumstance we'll be caught in a week from now, a month from now, even 4 days from now when this thing airs. I mean, it could all be different then, but it could all be over by then. Everybody go back to whatever, but I doubt it. Learn how it is that God invites me into deeper space. This is what the captivity in Babylon that I'm reading about in the Minor Prophets, that's what it could accomplish for Israel, was get back to what's important. You've gotten all involved in your own religious makings and idols and indulgences, and you neglect the poor and you don't do this and you're not, get back to what's really important. Love, do justice, love mercy, walk humbly, you know, do those things that are the most important thing. And if we do that in the world, then this will have some amazing fruit in spite of the fact that we'll also have some amazing devastation. Both are going to be true for a little while.
Yeah.
And if we can't wrap our heads around that, then we're going to be a danger to each other at this time. And whether or not, I look at that, could this be one of those birth pangs of the end of the age? You know, this is, we've been warned about this for a long time. Doctors have said in the mobile world in which we live, where people jump on a flight and then, was it, I don't know how many people have died in Washington because one man came out of that province with the virus, didn't know he had it, lands in Washington State, and that's one of the big things.
Yeah.
We're such a mobile culture now that we've got to be responsive to these kinds of things when they happen. And it's going to require, man, is it going to require shutting down everything like we're doing right now again? I don't know. But this was the fear during SARS and MERS and the other things that fortunately got a handle on much quicker than this. But this one's going to be big.
Yeah.
This one's going to hurt for a while.
And I think that's part of the humility needed in this conversation, is saying and honesty needed is, yeah, this is going to hurt for a while, and there is going to be suffering that's going to be involved in this. There is going to be challenges in this. And I think that's especially the branch of the Christian community that has said, oh no, as long as you have enough faith, you won't experience any suffering. You'll be able to fly around in peace in your private Learjet so that you can pray on your own. You know, that whole spousal.
So you don't have to be in a tube full of coronavirus. That's why you get to fly in your own private jet. Yeah,
absolutely. And there's,
and then your pilot has it. So there you go.
Hopefully we're not justifying more private jets.
Hopefully not.
But to be able to navigate this in a way that, yes, there will be challenges, there will be things that we have to face, and yet there also are those invitations into something different and something new.
Yeah.
To be able to journey into a space that I think for the first time in a long time, a vast majority of our nation might learn to be okay with the stillness in their own life. To be able to come to a pause, be able to come to rest, and actually be not absolutely terrified of what they're going to find internally when they come to a pause.
Yeah.
And actually look at what's going on inside.
And what I find rest in is always, I think the prayer of faith always begins with, my whole life is in his hands.
Mm-hmm.
Every breath I take is in Father's hands. And as long as I traverse this earth, great. And when it's over, you know what? I'm going to some place that's better. I mean, this is not what I was created for. This is a pretty broken place. I was created for the new heaven and the new earth that God's going to recreate at time. So take a deep breath and realize, man, my whole life is in him. everything about my life he's engaged with. It doesn't mean I'm going to get protected from every bad thing. It just means he's going to be with me in it, and yeah. he'll work it for good. And at the end of the day, we'll look back and say, man, our God was magnificent. He got us through things like that. But this is still, I mean, we say not since World War II, hundreds of thousands of our finest young men died in Europe and Japan during that war, hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
And society recovers, but we don't know what the cost of this is yet. It will be significant, but for each of us as individuals, we've got to realize, but God is with us. Mm-hmm. And if I listen and follow and live generously with alongside other people near me, then what needs to happen will. And we'll yep. come out of it still in God's good graces. And I'm sure what's scary about doing this is, man, that can all change tomorrow.
Yeah.
This even airs. But we're getting ready to go out of town. Sarah and I are going to get in our hermetically sealed car and go up and spend some time with my dad. So he's virus-free and 94, and I mean super high risk, but we're going to go up and spend a little time with him this weekend. So that'd be
okay.
fun.
Okay. Well, I hope you travel safe and enjoy your time up on Shaver Lake with your dad and enjoying some time up in the mountains.
Well, they got 2 feet of snow yesterday, so and more on the way. So we've had a very dry January, February. California has needed the rain and the snow that we've gotten the last 2 weeks. So coronavirus, awesome. Not a blessing. The snow and the rain in California right now, a huge blessing.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.